Hello everyone, my guest today is Hazel Courtney. She has been a Sunday Times columnist, or perhaps still is, worked for the Daily Mail, has run a health column for one of the papers, and she has been writing about alternative health subjects for several years. She has written a number of books, and I'll tell you what they are, because I think some of our listeners undoubtedly will have read one, if not all of them. Her first book was called Divine Intervention, which she published in 1999. She described something that she called a spiritual emergency or near-death experience, and she described it in detail as well as the events that followed. In 2005, she published a book called Evidence for the Sixth Sense, which she called Divine Intervention 2. And that covered the next few years of her life. Now, in 2010, Hazel has brought out her latest spiritual book, which she kindly sent me a copy and I've read, and I think it's terrific, which brings the story right up to date. And it contains interviews with several cutting-edge scientists and spiritual teachers on how the gap between spirituality and science is being bridged and how we can all become coherent. Now, I've read Evidence for the Sixth Sense, and I can tell you that the latest book is a lovely continuation of the story, and I do like the way that Hazel has brought spirituality and science together without making the book sound or read too heavy. So after that introduction, Hazel, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. And it's a lovely night. It's got a big full moon outside, so it's a very magical night tonight.
Oh. You're not telling me you're sitting outside.
No, I'm not sitting outside, but I'm sitting in my office, and I'm actually looking at full moon outside. So it's a beautiful, beautiful clear night. And it's strange because my original spiritual emergency happened on a full moon in Easter of 1998.
Right, well, I was going to get you to talk about that as your own introduction, because if there are listeners who are unaware of what brought all this about, perhaps you would like to explain a few details so that they know.
I would actually, because I think it's really important that people should understand where I'm coming from. So what happened to me was, at the time, back in 1998, I was a weekly columnist with the Sunday Times, and I used to write an alternative health column, a health and spiritual column, and on April the 8th, 1998, I walked into the store, Harrods in London, very famous store, and as I went through the turnstile in that used to be in the bread hall, it stuck fast, and it wouldn't go forward, wouldn't go back. And in those few seconds, Michael, it was as if a volcanic eruption had gone off inside my body, huge electrical tremors coming up through my body, up my spine, into my head, tremendous pain in my head and in my chest. But within about three, obviously I wondered what the hell was going on. And within 3 or 4 seconds, I could hear a voice shouting in my head that I knew had not emanated from myself. And it was shouting, "See a doctor now." And at that second, the turnstile went forward, and obviously I was very shocked. I couldn't figure what was going on and these huge pains in my chest. So I managed to get outside the store, and I rang my doctor, and you know, I knew it was some kind of an emergency, and so they said, "You better come now." And I got there within 15 minutes, believing that I perhaps only had minutes to live, because my father died when he was 49 of a massive heart attack. So I wondered if I too had had a heart attack. So the doctor puts me on the floor. He attaches all the heart monitors to me, and he starts playing my heartbeat down the phone to a cardiologist. And in that moment, I realized that I could feel what my doctor was thinking in his head. And so when I told him that my heart was perfect, when I told him what the cardiologist was saying to him, I'm really not quite sure who was more shocked, whether it was Brian, my doctor, or myself. And in the end, Brian, my doctor, said, look, I'm not sure what's going on here, but he said, your heart is fine, which I intuitively already knew. And he said, you better go home and have a cup of tea, which, of course, in England is our panacea for absolutely everything. And so I went, I took myself, I just about managed to get back to the London house. And when I looked in the mirror, Michael, my eyes had changed color. And considering the enormous shock I just had, I looked a lot younger. I felt completely different. And as my husband came home, because the doctor had called him and said he thought he'd better come home, I had begun levitating. And I wanted to phone a girlfriend to sort of say what the devil's going on. And as my arm went out to pick up the phone, my arm started doing its own thing and the phone was put back in the cradle. And I realized that I, me, Hazel, was no longer in charge of my physical body. And then things started to get seriously interesting. That night, I had the most incredible fever. I kept saying to my husband, look into my eyes and you'll know who I am. But of course, in that moment, I didn't know who the ultimate I was. And my husband was scared half to death, as was I. And in the end, at midnight, I rang a friend and he said, look, something big is happening. Go and eat sugar. Ground yourself. Which I did, even though I know that sugar is not a healthy food, it can make you very hyper. But in that moment, my brain, every question that I seemed to ask in my head, I was receiving multiple replies. But of course, I didn't know which, if any, was correct. And it's as if, Michael, I'd been plugged into an ultimate supercomputer. And anything I needed to know, in the second that I needed to know it, I knew. And then the next day, things got even more interested. It started to snow. There was this incredible storm happening, even though we were coming up to Easter of 1998. So it was actually mid-April, so the weather was quite freaky. And the fever got much worse. I found that I was no longer being allowed to eat physical food, which, by the way, I adore, even though I'm very thin. I love my food. And I had a fever alternating with a cold that I'd never known before in my life. And this voice shouting in my head. And in the end, I managed to get myself back to Birmingham, where we used to live at weekends. And a friend suggested, a spiritual friend came over to try and help me. I knew I couldn't call our own normal Orthodox doctor because I knew he wouldn't understand. And my next door neighbor, who had originally taught me to meditate, she said, I think you might be possessed. You might have had a walk-in. And I said, what the devil's that? And she said, I think a spirit that has passed over, has entered into your energy field, is now speaking through you. And of course, I just, well, if I hadn't have been so poorly by that time, I would have laughed, because I just said, come on, you know, it's 1998. I'm a Sunday Times journalist. I've got a husband. I've got a family. I've got a life. These things don't just happen. Anyway, the long and short was that a doctor friend of ours came up from London to live with us that weekend, because by the Saturday, with everything that was happening, I knew I was dying of shock. I just couldn't cope with it anymore. The television was changing channels on its own. I was affecting and being affected by electrical equipment. I found I was unable to use the telephone. I levitated a couple of times. I could see energies moving around the room. I was totally telepathic. I mean, and so I found out months later that my kundalini energy that goes up the spine had actually blown, which it can spontaneously in Harrods, which means that the veils between this existence and other existences had completely lifted. But of course, I just was totally, totally unprepared for it. And so on the Easter Saturday afternoon, I, with the doctor present, I moved from this world, out of my body, and I found myself on the ceiling of my bedroom looking down on this like film below me, and me, Hazel, was still there. I was still alive. I was still conscious. But it took me a while to realize that what was below me was me. It was my body. And I wasn't upset. I was free. It was absolutely incredible. And I made a pact with the spirit world that if I could go back, I would tell my story. And I was allowed, obviously, the next thing I know, I'm back in my body. And it took about 9 months for the whole thing to sort itself out. It was a long time before I heard the phrase spiritual emergency, which is when a spiritual awakening becomes a physical crisis, which mine certainly did. And as a Sunday Times journalist, I was so determined to find rational explanations for how, for a short time, I had been able to effect what some people would call miracles. And I've spent the last 12 years doing just that.
Right. Would you have died if you had not agreed to write the book then?
I don't know. Right. It's like saying, would Princess Diana have married Dodie if she hadn't been killed in the car? We don't know. Do you know what I mean? I think the angel of death, I've been told many times that the angel of death came to me, but it was, I was sort of given a choice to fight, to keep fighting, to stay alive and to go on. So it felt important to the spirit world that I should come back and tell the truth of my story. But I think if I had have died, someone else would have told the story, you know, because we are eternal. We do go on, and we are spirit encased in a physical shell. So I think at the time, the reason I had become a columnist with the Sunday Times is because I'd met all these spiritual people. I knew who to call as a spiritual type medical doctor. And so I had that help in place. But I think without that help, a lot of people end up in mental homes. It's rare for a spiritual emergency to kill someone, but I mean, mine was quite a shocking experience, which, by the way, nobody needs to go through if they can learn to meditate and to grow incoherence slowly and safely. So would I have died if I hadn't agreed to come back? I think maybe I would. I mean, I was free. I was ready to go. I had no wish to return to the body. So I made a pact that if I would be allowed back, I would tell the story, and that's what I've done.
It sounds very much to me as though you had already agreed to do this before you came into this lifetime.
Well, I think I absolutely did. I think a lot of what happens to us in our life, I think we all come in with a blueprint. I think that we all come in with certain major events that are basically ordained to happen no matter what. But the way we get to those junctions in our life is up to us. We do have a degree of free will, and we live on a physical 3D planet. So I think that sometimes you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You come in with your blueprint, but the more conscious you become of who you really are and that you did come in with a blueprint and you go setting about making that happen. Let's face it, Michael, 99% of people on this planet are like walking robots. They have no idea of what we're talking about now. So once you realize that you are spirit in a physical body and that you come with a purpose and that we all emanate from one source and that at a certain level we are indeed all one from one mind, then you start to get the bigger picture. And so once you become conscious or far more spiritual, you realize that what you give out is what you get back. When you shout at someone, yes, the physics makes us separate in this reality, but at a much higher level, you're shouting at yourself.
So could you in any way relate what happened to you to anything earlier in your life? I mean, were you doing things that might have led to that experience?
Absolutely, I was. What happened was my next door neighbour, Norma, I was the most vacuous, thought that the only thing that mattered in life was shopping or how much money you'd got or how fashionable you were. I mean, I really was a total airhead. And what happened was my next door neighbour died in Birmingham, and a week or two after he died, I thought I really must walk across the garden, go knock on my neighbour's door and tell her I'm very sorry that her husband died. They'd been married a very long time. And I was very surprised because she wasn't crying. And she said to me, she said, you know, I can hear my husband and I can see him wherever, whenever I want. And I thought, oh, crikey, you know, this woman needs a psychiatrist and some Valium, you know. I thought she was really, you know, two sandwiches short of a picnic. But she sat me down and she explained that she believed in the spirit world and that she could hear spirit. And, of course, it was as if a light bulb had gone on in my head. And she gave me the most marvelous book. I don't know if it's still in print. It's called The Little Guidebook by a guy called Tony Neat, who was a teacher at Runnings Park in Malvern, which I think is no longer there. And I read this, but I stayed up the whole night and read it. And it was just fantastic. And from that moment on, it was like a whole new world opened before me. And Norma started teaching me to meditate every week. And, of course, as you meditate, you awaken your sixth sense, for want of a better word. And eventually I got into healing and Reiki and lots of other things. And a friend of mine said, have you heard of this woman called Mother Mira, who is an enlightened lady who originally you could go to Germany and you could kneel before her and she would pulse the divine energy that flowed through and around her into your eyes, which was supposed to help accelerate one's spiritual growth. So of course, I was so keen on this whole subject. And so I said, oh, right, let's go to Germany. And off I went. And as I knelt before Mother Mira, she gives what's known as Darshan, which is like a blessing. Yes. And the whole thing is done in silence. And they told us that as you kneel before her and she pulses energy into your eyes, they said, be sure that you're wishing for what you want in your life. So for 3 nights, I went up for Darshan in the January of 1998. And I said to Mother in my mind, I said, I'm asking for a great acceleration in my spiritual growth. So 3 months later, I had the experience in Harrods. So I would say to your listeners, be very careful what you wish for, because quite often your wishes come true, but not quite in the way that you might have expected it to.
Indeed, yes. Just as a little point here, talking of Tony Neat, I used to be a member of the Atlantean Society and actually ran one of their branches for a long number of years. So I know. I did know.
It's a small world. I think we're all networking. But I do think, Michael, it's really important that I then went on to meet some fantastic cutting edge scientists, people like William Tiller, a world class physicist. I went to Arizona to meet with him, and I'll never forget, I sat at this breakfast overlooking the red rocks of Arizona, and I said to Bill, I said, what is God to you, Bill? And he drew this straight line across a piece of paper, and I said, what's that? And he said, that's what God is. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, that is total coherence. And he said to me in the beginning that everything, all things, all levels of energy were one. Everything was totally coherent, which is what God is. And in physics, they term it being in phase. But Bill told me that there can only be stability in a dynamic state of change. And so Bill reckons that this pure coherence is all the time decohering and recohering. And he states that humanity, our consciousness, has reached its lowest level of coherence possible. And you only have to watch the news every day to think, well, he's just about right on this one. And he believes that the more people that can become spiritual, really spiritual, that we are now recohering. And I said, well, what does that mean, Bill? And he said, it basically means that we're going home to who we really are. We're going to become more coherent. And then I went on to meet a marvelous man called Professor Frederick Travis in Iowa. He runs a center for cognition and consciousness in Iowa. And they've spent 30 years experimenting on the science of enlightenment. And it was a joy for me to talk to Fred. Hundreds of hours I've spoken to him. And when I said to Fred, what is the difference between a truly enlightened man or woman and the rest of us? And he said, their brains are totally coherent. And that kind of blew me away. And I said, well, what does that mean? What's happening in the physical brain? And he said, it means that their whole brain is acting as one unit all the time. And as you meditate, or if you chant, or if you do your spinning, or whatever it is that's spiritual, over time and slowly, an area within the center of the brain called the thalamus, not the thymus, which is in your chest, that's the immune system, your thalamus in the center of the brain that's linked to sight, touch, smell, hearing, and so on, it starts to ramp up, and it starts to act in a more coherent manner. So this is why when people meditate and tune into the space between their thoughts, which is known as the vacuum level of reality, their brain starts to act in a different way. It functions differently. And that's why when I had that incredible energy surge in Harrods, I could smell people's thoughts. I could see more. I could hear more. And I'll never forget when one scientist said to me, he said, how did the world smell to you, Hazel, when you were in that very heightened state? And I said, this world absolutely stinks. And so the more you can work on yourself and be at peace with yourself, coherence is catching. And so the more you can start treating other people as you want to be treated yourself, the more the whole mind that we live and exist within will become more coherent, and we will see a great flowering on this planet. We live in a heaven on earth, but we just don't know it. And it, cause and effect. So, you know, if you eat all the wrong foods, don't be surprised if you've got high cholesterol, you have a heart attack or whatever. But, you know, more right actions bring about more right reactions and more right results. And that goes right through to becoming enlightened.
Yes. Funnily enough, I have heard through another ET channeling that when they first visited the Earth, they also commented on the fact that it stinks. But I believe it was put down to the smell that goes with the very low vibration that we're living in.
Well, it emanates from the negative thoughts. Thoughts,
yes,
are things. I've actually seen thought form orbs. I also, in the book, have written a whole chapter on orbs, which are like, right, plasmoid beings of spheres of light that are appearing all over the world. Some people can see them, but digital cameras can register them quite easily. And I've actually seen enlightened men and women concentrating their thought forms, and those thought forms appearing as orbs outside their physical body. Thoughts are things. They contribute to the whole. And negative thoughts and emotions are very powerful. They are things, and they contribute to the whole. So because there is so much negativity going on in the world, as you say, very low vibration, they stink, plain and simple.
Yes. You were talking about smell. What made me laugh somewhat was when you said that at one time you could feel the energy of meat that was being served to someone else who was next to you.
Yeah, I think that because I was in a very, very heightened state for quite some time, my husband ate a piece of chicken, which a friend had come to feed us because I was pretty much incapable of doing hardly anything for a while. And I could feel how the chicken had died. I could feel the fear. And in fact, I'll never forget, as long as I live, I remember a Daily Mail newspaper coming through the door. And Pol Pot, do you remember Pol Pot in Cambodia who killed millions
Absolutely.
Of people? They
Yes.
had a picture of him on the front of the newspaper dead because he'd been shot or whatever. And I actually had to have the newspaper removed from the house instantly because I could feel the energy emanating from that picture. It was quite astonishing. And that's Gosh. Why I also got people to remove their shoes when they came in my house because I realized then that we tread in with us all the negative energies that we've picked up on our, you know, on our walkings day in and day out. And obviously I'm very grounded now, so I walk around in shoes all the time, and I'm very normal now, and I don't have these incredible abilities anymore, but I do have scientific explanations for them, and they are out there, and that's what I have written about in the three books. That's why I wrote them, to try and help people, A, not to have to go through what I went through, B, to explain to people who they really are and what we are all truly capable of. And I have to tell you, Michael, I think you already know, it's incredible.
Absolutely. Well, I think you've done a wonderful job there. Now, was it yourself that had an out-of-the-body experience where you went through the galaxies and to the beginning of time?
Oh, no, that was, oh, no, what the devil was that chap's name? Oh, dear. Okay, well, I know I wrote about that in one of the chapters, and I'm madly now looking for it. But, no, it was a healer, and I read his...
I know who it is, then.
Go on, what's his name?
Mellon Thomas Benedict.
That's it. That's oh gosh, right. Aren't you wonderful? I'm afraid I've forgotten his name. yes, right. Mellon Thomas Benedict. If anybody wants to look him up, and it was amazing because he claims to have died in a hospice, and he asked the nurses and doctors to leave his body as it was for several hours, and he has written on his website the most beautiful description that just made me weep and weep and weep, saying how he went back through the galaxies, back through, right back to the beginning of physical time, meaning the Big Bang, when this physical universe was birthed. And I kept saying to people at the height of my experience, I come from the beginning of time. But in fact, who we really are, which is what people call God or the all that is, created time. So therefore we come from a space that was here before our physical time was birthed. And it's also very interesting, while mentioning the Big Bang, that Thomas Mellon said that new universes are being birthed all the time. And it's really important that even scientists like Michio Kaku, who presents the program of the universe, which is absolutely wonderful, he says that whatever mechanism created this reality could create many realities. And it's really important for people to keep in mind, we might call it the Big Bang that happened 14 billion years ago, but to keep in mind that we, when this universe first began, it was less than the size of an atom. You could have held this universe in the palm of your hand. At the moment of that bang, which actually wasn't a bang at all because there's no noise in space, we, everything that exists, and this is so incredible, was less than the size of an atom. And you could fit a million atoms behind one of your hairs. And so as the seconds, as physical time, as this space-time was birthed, After a few seconds, it expanded, 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 got bigger and bigger and bigger, and we are still expanding. But the point is, we all came from this tiny core of coherent oneness. And every atom that makes up your body, my desk, the planets, the trees, everything that exists in this universe is fundamentally made of atoms. And so when you think that they've all been here since the beginning of time, so therefore what we all are is recycled energy and information. That's what we are.
That is very mind-boggling and difficult to understand, but never mind. It's interesting to know, because I think the question is often asked, what is God? Now, just going back to the orbs, I know you're very interested in them, and you went to an orb conference in 2007, but what is the recognized explanation as to what orbs are?
Right, well, Klaus Heinemann, and I recognize anyone should go, Klaus Heinemann and Dr. Michal Ledwith have written some wonderful books on orbs. And what Klaus Heinemann is a physicist, a material physicist who worked for many years at Stanford University in America. And his company still do research now on the space shuttle and on flying ships of the future. And he started hearing reports of plasma like spheres of light that were appearing on digital photographs and films all over the world. And he thought that orbs were spheres that were on top of crowns that went on heads of state, sort of thing, you know, the orb that the Queen holds at a coronation, that kind of thing. And he Googled orbs, and he realized that this phenomena was happening all over the world. So he then started taking, he went to a conference, a science conference, and he started taking pictures at the conference of one of the main speakers. And much to his amazement, there were some orbs in the picture. And so as a very highly accredited scientist, he started investigating this. And he's done many, 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 many experiments at Stanford and in his own time. And he believes that they are plasma beings of consciousness, intelligent consciousness. He's found that orbs can move at a speed of 500 miles an hour or more, that they are conscious, they are intelligent, and they emit coherent light. And so he believes, and Dr. Michal Ledwith, who's a theologian, who's got the largest collection of orb photographs anywhere in the world, they believe that orbs are many things. That first of all, when we die, I believe we become an orb. You are no longer seen in this reality. So in other words, your consciousness is existing as you outside of physical space-time. Like, do you remember me saying I was on the bedroom ceiling looking down?
Yes.
So I was still there, but I wonder if what was holding me in that, whatever it was like an orb, because a lot of people see orbs, for instance, at weddings where they might have lost a loved one. And when they look at the pictures, there's an orb where the loved one would have stood. If you look at these films on the web of, say, the night that Obama was inaugurated as president, my goodness, that was a big night. There are thousands of orbs in pictures that can be seen by anybody. So first of all, Klaus believes that they are the spirit world. Secondly, he believes that they are non-physical entities, and all kinds of entities that have always been there, but we just haven't been able to see them before. And the reason we're starting to see them now is that digital technology is more sensitive to the infrared range of the visible spectrum than film cameras, you know, the older cameras. So orbs show up predominantly in this spectrum. So I would remind your listeners that, for instance, say if the visible light spectrum in this universe was 2,500 miles long, how much, Michael, do you think that we can see of our physical reality with our physical eyes?
Interesting question. I really can't answer that.
Okay, you can see, I don't know what it is in centimeters, you can see 2 inches of it. So in other words, what we most people think what is real, in inverted commas, is what they can see with their physical eyes. But just because we can't see something, it doesn't mean to say it's not there. I mean, people use mobile phones and they now accept them quite readily, but they can't see that voice coming into their, you know, into their mobile phone. You can't see the radio waves, the various frequencies when you turn on your television. But if you turn on your television, you can switch now with Sky and all these different cable channels. You can watch dozens and dozens and dozens of channels, and all you're doing is switching frequencies.
Yes.
And so there are millions, and almost an infinite number of beings, consciousnesses, other realities that are existing alongside our own, but we're just not able to see them. But people who are waking up, remember, as I said to you, if people meditate, if they chant, whatever it is, any way that you can to help your brain grow in coherence, then the thalamus starts to wake up. Now, remember, this is your birthright. You can then see more frequencies. You can hear more frequencies. You can smell more. And so on. And so it's really important for people to know that, you know, as you grow in coherence, you will see more, hear more, you will become more conscious.
Hmm. I would guess it's true to say that our senses are really quite poor.
Oh, they're unbelievably poor.
Yeah, compared to many animals.
Oh, definitely. I mean, horses, dogs, cats, they can hear frequencies that we can't hear. And so they're far more sensitive than we are. But people who are genuine psychics, brilliant mediums, brilliant psychic surgeons, brilliant healers, they are more sensitive to more frequencies. But we all have this capability. But Michael, it's like if you want to learn to play the piano, you have to go and have a few lessons. You have to find a good teacher. And yes, that's why many enlightened men and women are now on this planet. And if one resonates with you, if one is on your wavelength, then listen to what they've got to say and learn from them. But when someone starts, say, asking you for lots of money, or if you're being coerced, then you get out of there. But this is why this subject is so huge, we could talk all night, but say absolutely, if you go to a specific healer, and that healer does a great job and really makes you feel better, but you go to another healer and you get no results whatsoever, it's simply a compatibility of wavelengths and frequencies. So when you meet someone at a party, if you don't like them, but you've never met them before, they've never done you any harm, they're a perfectly nice person, but for some reason you don't like them, this can be because your frequencies, which we all emit our own unique range of frequencies, which are as unique to us as our DNA profile, if your frequencies are not compatible with other people's, you're never going to get on.
Right. But isn't it strange that they still carry with your image, and I'm referring to what you said about that photograph?
What did I say? Oh, yes, the photograph of Pol Pot.
Yeah.
I think that, in other words, I could feel the frequency of fear that he had emitted when he'd been alive. So, in other words, I had become ultra, ultra, ultra sensitive.
Yes.
I mean, I've met people who've been, for instance, say, to Germany, and they have been to Auschwitz, where they've told me, I've never been there, but they've said, you know, that the energy there is so dark and so sad. And, you know, the energy, remember, everything that happens creates an energy field, everything you think. So where you have an inordinately enormous concentration of fear, that fear is still encapsulated there. So you can also go to places, say like Lourdes, where lots of people have been very joyful and they've gone there to pray with the hope of a miracle. The water at Lourdes is very coherent. The crystals in the water at Lourdes are pretty coherent. And so Bill Tiller explained to me, I'm sorry, I keep jumping subjects here, but he said,
Saith
200 of us tonight went into a church hall or any hall, and we're all praying for one thing to happen. We're all of like minds.
Yeah.
He said this creates an energy field. It creates what he calls a sacred space. In science, it's known as a conditioned space. And he said you start to build like an invisible lattice-like grid. And he said then you all go home for the night, and the energy starts to dissipate somewhat. But then you come back the next night and you pray for the same thing again, and the energy starts to build on the lattice grid. And eventually, if you do this enough, the energy reaches a plateau, and then it comes into this reality. It becomes set in this reality. And so it's really important for people to realize that everything we think, everything we say, and everything we do is helping to create our reality. So when an enlightened man or woman, like I once watched Sai Baba manifest ash, which is what I was doing for a short time, and people were kissing the floor and worshipping him and everything, matter is mind and intention form patterns that form matter.
Right.
And so what true masters of the self are doing is they are focusing very, very much. They're organizing energy so that physical events and objects can manifest in this reality. And that is, I will reiterate this, because mind and intention form patterns which form matter. So with those 200 people in that church every night, you can actually bring something into this reality by a sustained, focused intention. And you can do the same with your own life.
Mm, very interesting. Now, everybody loves a good story. And I will ask you to tell us about Jennifer Stewart and her two disabled sons.
Oh, right. Yeah, this was a really interesting chapter, actually. There's a guy called Robert Schwartz, I think his name is. Robert Schwartz, and he's a soul researcher. And he found that he hired highly experienced mediums to do trials in which someone who is experiencing a very, very, very difficult existence in this lifetime would go to him, and Robert Schwartz would take them along to this medium, all under controlled conditions. This person came from another city. They'd never met the medium before. The medium had never met them. It was all filmed. It was all recorded. It was all documented. And what he found was that this particular woman who'd got two profoundly children who were, one of them had a learning disability and only knew about 20 words, and the other one was very, very, very disabled. And she kept wondering why she'd chosen this life, and a lot of the time she was very suicidal because she just couldn't cope. And when the soul researcher tuned into her past lives, she said that this lady had been a worker in America. And she'd been a journalist in America who had wanted to expose what was going on in the concentration camps. But the people in America, it was so horrific, they didn't want to believe her. In other words, she could not communicate through the newspapers. And apparently in that previous life, she got very frustrated because they didn't want to hear the truth. And her two children in previous lives had both been Nazis who had both spread propaganda, and they had then chosen to come back into this lifetime to learn how to communicate differently, and she chose to be their mother so that she could teach them to communicate even though they have very, very, very disabled bodies. Mm. So in other words, Robert Schwartz has discovered through many, many, many stories and many, many, many trials that we do absolutely choose each lifetime for a specific purpose, and that once you can discover that purpose, you can perhaps change your attitude to what's going on around you. And actually, although your circumstances might not necessarily change, your attitude to it does, and you therefore live a more complete life once you realize that you actually chose to do this for a reason. And the reason is always to help the whole mind that we exist within to grow in coherence. So like I might have chosen this lifetime to have more patience because I'm terribly impatient. And other people may come for all kinds of reasons. But what Robert did say, which I found very interesting, he said that the more you grow in spirituality at a soul level, the more challenging you choose your next lifetimes to be. So he said, next time you pass someone who's dying of AIDS or who's starving or who might be an alcoholic asleep on the street, you know, don't judge them because they might be a very highly evolved soul that's coming to experience what it's like to be as low as you can possibly get. Mm-hmm. To maybe help others to have more compassion. So I've learned on this journey to try not to judge people as much as I would have previously done.
Right, now we're talking in part about the power of sound, and I'm referring now to people's voices. It's almost certain that some people's voices have a more calming effect than others. But what I wanted to refer to, which you have spoken about in the book, is the chant of the Om. Now, what is the power behind that Om?
Aha, right, okay. Now, you've caught me unawares here. okay, all right. Well, it's bringing together the physical and the spiritual, and it really does help to entrain your brain to becoming more coherent. And in fact, I'm just looking for, there's a wonderful lady called Jill Purce, P-U-R-C-E, and she is married to Rupert Sheldrake, and she teaches people how to become more enlightened through the power of sound. And as I'm talking to you, I'm madly looking for the chapter in which I talked about this, because you're right, she gave me the most wonderful explanation as to what the Om is actually telling us. Do you know, I can't find it. I know you're going to think I'm absolutely useless, but
You haven't got it in your index, have you? I'm looking at your book as well.
All right. Well, if you, I know that I did a chapter on the power of sound and how you can calibrate coherence. And I did actually write what the Om is about, but the Om is basically helping to. I think I've just found it now.
Right.
Please forgive me. Okay. Oh, here she is. I always wondered, you see, why the sound of the Om always helped me to raise my vibration. And she said, when we make vocal sounds, we use consonants and vowels. Consonants are vocal sounds that are characterized by an interruption of the air within the mouth, such as when you use the letters B, C, D, F, G, and so on. And then she says, whereas vowels, A, E, I, O, and U are a sound in which there is no interruption. And so she was saying, if you chant the word Om properly, which she spells A-U-M, it is entirely made up of vowels which encourage the brain to grow in coherence. Mm. And it ends with an M, which incorporates that order or spirit into matter is represented by the disorder of the consonant sound. So anyway, she was basically saying that Om in ancient Vedic scripts translates into that which sustains everything, which is order, and it pervades everything. So in other words, when you chant the Om, you're doing exactly the same as you are when you meditate. You're waking up the thalamus and you're helping the brain to work in a different way.
Well, Hazel, I'm going to have to just stop you there.
Oh, sorry, I'm rabbiting on. Sorry.
No, that's quite all right. We've just about reached the end of the program.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I do want the last minute to announce next week's guests. So I'll have to thank you for very much for coming on. You're certainly very knowledgeable. And we could have gone on for another hour, I think, in truth. And it's 10 minutes. Oh, right, okay. Did you hear our studio man tell us we've got 10 minutes?
Oh, okay.
He's given us another bit of a lease there. Okay, so do you want to say any more about the Om then? And we can give you a...
Well, I think going beyond the Om, I think it's very important for people to understand, as time is running short, that the more you can realize that you are spirit having a physical experience, the more that you can realize what you give out is what you get back, and the more that you realize that you are part of God and that all parts make the whole. And when you look into your eyes at night, keep saying, I love you and everything is perfect, and you are actually looking at God at an ultimate level. We are all part of God and all parts make the whole. And so I think that we all need to realize when we're perhaps worshipping enlightened men or women, we shouldn't be envious of them and we shouldn't kiss their feet necessarily, because they are somewhat more ahead down the road than we are. And so they're helping us to where we all need to be going. Do you remember the phrase in the Bible that Jesus said, everything that I can do, you too can do and more? And
absolutely.
What all these enlightened people were doing, they were trying to show us, and still trying to show us, that we all have these capabilities. Even in the Bible, it says something like, ye are gods.
Yes.
Yeah. We are all part of God in a physical body, and we all emanate from one source. So next time you read the Sunday papers and you're cursing a prime minister or a minister or Mr. Mugabe or whoever it happens to be, that person is an aspect of the whole self, of which you are also a part. And yes, the physics in this reality makes us all separate. I'm Hazel, you're Michael, and Don is Don, and so on. But at an ultimate level, we are all God. We're all part of God. And so we're all seeing the world through our own eyes, through our own perspective. And so what God is doing is, it's growing in capability by being inside all of us, and therefore it's having 6 billion experiences which all go to help God or whatever God is, which even Bill Tiller says we are nowhere near conscious enough to even begin to understand what God is. But by having God inside us, we are part of God, and therefore we're helping God to grow in experience. So help people as much as you can to treat others as you would be treated, and have respect for people even if they don't respect you. Because remember what I said many minutes ago, that coherence is catching. And so they've done trials in Israel, Kosovo, America, all over the world. And Fred Travis has these documented, that where you get 200 experienced meditators meeting in a space over several days with the intention of doing nothing more than awakening the pure, coherent energy that is all around us and inside of us, then what would happen in, say, Kosovo and Israel when these people sat and meditated. The number of casualties went down. The number of violent incidents went down. When they did it in Miami, there were less burglaries. There were less muggings. There were less car accidents. Mm. The more that we can all grow in coherence at every level of our being, you can start looking after your diet. You can start being nice to people a bit more often. You can do things spontaneously for people that you might not otherwise have done. And the more you can spread happiness, it sounds like a terrible cliche, but happiness and love is coherence. And therefore, you can just bring a bit more of it into other people's lives and touch them, and then it spreads. It spreads.
Mm. So, in fact, God is inside all of us, and we are God.
We live inside. Yeah. We exist inside the mind of something. And whether you call that the grand organizing designer, whether you call it Allah, whether you call it all it is, we are existing inside this massive mind. I mean, when you think that you have sufficient energy in the atoms that make up your body now, you are 99.999% empty space. And that empty space is full of energy and information. You have enough potential energy inside you, Michael, now to unleash the energy of a nuclear bomb. Gosh. So we all have access to this energy, which for a time I had access to some of it. And I have to tell you, it blew my mind for sure. And I thought that I would spontaneously combust because the energy was so tremendous. But what we have to do is learn how to modulate this energy, to transform it into a way that our physical body can cope with it. And then help pass it on to others.
Right. I'll put the $64 question to you now. What is the purpose of life?
To learn and to grow in coherence. To know who you really are and to help everyone else to understand that too.
Right. Well, I think you do. You believe in reincarnation, so
totally. I said earlier, we are nothing more than recycled energy and information. So we've all been here hundreds and hundreds of times before. Now, whether it's been on this physical planet or on other planets or other realities, because remember, consciousness exists everywhere in many forms on many frequencies. So you might say someone was previously a Pleiadian or whatever they were, and they've now decided to incarnate into a physical body to experience how that feels. We've all been here in this physical world since the beginning, as Thomas Mellon says, since the beginning of our physical time. But consciousness has been here for all time, but we just can't get our heads around it, because when you die, you are no longer constrained by our physical space-time. You exist outside of space-time, and therefore you can reincarnate into any period in time. It's a huge subject, Michael.
Yes, so everything really is in the now.
Everything is in the now, but most people just don't know it.
Well, that it does explain a lot why we can indeed appear to go back in time and, of course, also into the future.
Into potential futures. I do know that we're all creating the future with our thoughts and actions as we go along. And so I was able to see for a time our potential futures, and I could see many of them. But I knew that what we do in the now decides what happens in our individual futures and our collective futures. So everything that we're doing now will affect our children and our children's children.
Right. What I wanted to ask you now, because we are gradually reaching the last few minutes of the program,
sure,
is, have you any particular message that you would like to pass over to our listeners?
Oh, crikey. Just know that you are far more special than you might think you are. and learn to forgive yourself and stop carrying so much guilt around and learn to be less judgmental. I think that what holds us back, I think that say if, God forgive, I mean, you know, a person on a spiritual path, let's say, would not normally commit a murder. But say if you had a hardened criminal in prison who genuinely and with their whole heart was sorry, then I believe that you can go forward, pay your debt to society and go on and contribute to that society. But I think it's really important that people should wake up and realize that we are far more special than most of us know and that we're capable of far more than most of us realize. And we all have as our birthright these potential capabilities. And the more you can have spiritual practices and love yourself and look after yourself and others, the more you will grow in coherence and the happier will be your life. Because the more love you get, what you give out is what you get back. So the more love frequency that you give out, that's more what you'll get back. Because whatever right. God, you know, that's our right. ultimate message.
Right, that's fine. Now, would you like to reel off your website address for anybody
oh,
who's
sure.
not aware
Thank
of
you.
It?
Thank you. Yeah, it's www.HazelCourtney.com. HazelCourtney.com. And in fact, on there, people can watch a 1 hour video, it's perfectly free, of a lecture I gave at Alternatives in London a couple of months ago. And that explains a lot of the science that we've been talking about tonight.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much. It's been a very, very interesting chat with you. I just have time to mention to my listeners that next week my guest will be Fred Burks. He's wants to talk about exploring the mind and heart with a view to talking about global transformation on planet Earth for all who are ready to play a role in shifting our planet to a new paradigm. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you very much.